Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel. My name is Arimithius, and today we're carrying on our series of close readings of Elder Scrolls texts by looking at the Cyrodiilic creation myth, also called Shazar's Song. This is part of the larger monomyth text. If you're just joining us now, check the previous episodes out for the previous myths that are part of this particular text. But this is centered around the stories that are told in Cyrodiil and therefore have quite a mannish outlook on things. It's pretty much the only mannish perspective that we get apart from the Yokuden creation myth. So this is the only mannish Tamrielic myth that we actually have, which is quite interesting if you think about it in terms of what races make up Tamriel. You'd almost expect it to be an equal representation, but it's not really. The myths that are told here are generally based on Mirish legends and myths, if not explicitly Mirish in their current form, which is really quite interesting. It paints a picture of a cosmology that is pretty much soaked in Mirish terms and outlooks from the get-go, despite cultures not really having many Mirish roots and many Mirish records as part of their ongoing way of being. And even within this one, we'll see a few little nods to Mirish legends and Mirish ways of thinking as we go through, particularly in some of the terms. But shall we get to the text? This was a new thing that Shazar described to the gods, becoming mothers and fathers, being responsible, and making great sacrifices with no guarantee of success. But Shazar spoke beautifully to them, and moved them beyond mystery and tears. Now this myth starts off with the end point of the Cyrodiilic creation myth that was potentially suggesting that things could maybe have descended from gods to mortals by way of being a parent, and this kicks off with Shazar talking to the gods about being mothers and fathers right at the get-go. It's suggesting mortality and the current ways of mortality as being fundamentally baked into the universe in a way that other myths don't really, which is quite interesting if you think about the way that the Mirish religions, particularly the Alt-Mirri religions, vilify Lorcan. If they had this as a starting point, then the Mir are doing a fantastic smear job on the person who created the mortal plane, who was quite upfront about all this if you think about it. Thus the Aedra gave free birth to the world, the beasts and the beings, making these things from parts of themselves. This free birth was very painful, and afterwards the Aedra were no longer young and strong and powerful, as they had been from the beginning of days. Now this is quite interesting because it talks about Aedra, and Aedra, as we learn from the book Aedra and Daedra, is a Mirish term, which suggests that even here, even within this most Cyrodiilic of Cyrodiilic things, that the perspective of the Mir is quite central to how these men are thinking about it, which we can kind of expect in the Cyrodiilic's case, because we're looking at a culture that spent so long being slaves to the Aelids, so of course they've got to have picked up some degree of Mirish culture. I can kind of forgive them for that in terms of how they think about their gods, but it's one thing to bear in mind when thinking about the wider lore that the term Aedra is a Mirish thing, and when there's some talk about the Aedra, you need to establish whether we're talking about the Aedra as in the Divines, as they will be, but or the Aedra as the Mir see them. There's quite a bit of overlap here, which can get a little frustrating. And we've also got here the Aedra giving free birth to the world, which is a culmination of some of the parenthood things that we see in the myth of the Arabis that the Cyrodiilics put forward. It was kind of a suggestion, half-hearted, alongside a lot of other possible, equally plausible suggestions. But this is very definitely giving birth to the world but you've also got the making things from parts of themselves, which isn't quite birth. It suggests some sort of conscious shaping and a process of creation, which, if you look at the beginning of the monomyth, the men will say, oh, the gods created us. They won't say, we are descended from the gods. That's a fundamental distinction between man and myrrh. But that being made from is still part of descent in the broad term. This does contrast a little bit with the way that we see it in the Anuad, where the Etarda become the Elnafei, and then they're split into the Wandering and Old Elnafei, which are split along ideological lines, not really how they came to be. And the Old Elnafei are the ancestors of the Myrrh, and the Wandering Elnafei are the ancestors of men. If we take the Anuad's account, then there's no distinction between creation and descent, and this slightly blurs the lines with that. As I said, we've got the making things from themselves. So if you take a part of yourself and make something of it, is it your descendant or is it your creation? In a way, we can talk about mortal babies being made by their mothers and the fathers by taking parts of themselves and making something new. So which is it? That ambiguity is very present here in a way that it's not elsewhere. There's also the suggestion of death here, but not the reality of death. There's talk about the birth being painful and the Aedra no longer being strong and young and powerful, but there's definitely a diminishment, but there is no death. We're not talking about these beings dying and all having to mate with each other to stay alive, as we see in the Yokuden creation myth. This is in strict contrast to the Mirish view, which talks about the Aedra dying in order to become something else. Some Aedra were disappointed and bitter in their loss, and angry with Shazar and with all creation, for they felt Shazar had lied and tricked them. These Aedra, the gods of the Aldmer, led by Auriel, were disgusted by their enfeebled selves and by what they had created. I think this is a lovely little piece of compromise here between the perspective of man and myrrh, because you've got some Aedra who were disappointed, you've got some who don't want the mortal world to continue now they've realised what it entails, but some quite obviously do from how you look at this. And so you've got an interesting way of explaining the schism between man and myrrh and how they look at it. You've got some who are angry at losing power, and then later on we'll see you've got some that look on it and are pleased with everything. So, and you've got a reason for the distinction there between the mannish and myrrhish gods to a greater degree than you do with other creation myths at this point. Everything is spoiled, for now and for all time, and the most we can do is teach the elven races to suffer nobly, with dignity, and chastise ourselves for our folly, and avenge ourselves upon Shazar and his allies. Thus are the gods of the elves dark and brooding, and thus are the elves ever dissatisfied with mortality, and always proud and stoic, despite the harshness of this cruel and indifferent world. Other Aedra looked upon creation and were well pleased. These Aedra, the gods of men and beast folk, led by Akatosh, praised and cherished their wards, the mortal races. I want to pause here quickly and talk about the way that they're talking about different types of Aedra. The Aedra is being described as a class of being here, and essentially being used as the people who made the immaterial world and the ancestors of all the mortal races, and you've got the ones that like it and the ones that don't. But if you look at the pantheons of the various races, then you can see that there's quite a bit of overlap here. You've got Mara, who is the most common deity in across all Tamrielic pantheons virtually, and then you've got Arkay, and you've got various others that are very definitely in both Mirish and Mannish pantheons. This divide that has the Mirish gods being displeased with creation and the Mannish gods being thoroughly pleased with creation is kind of interesting. And this text also makes quite a difference between Akatosh and Auriel. You'll see several other texts claim that Auriel is simply the elven Akatosh, and that Akatosh is a Mirish deity, and that Akatosh is simply another word for Auriel, depending on who's speaking. There's an awful lot of confusion about precisely who is what and whether they're separate beings or not. This is possibly made a bit muddier by the events of the Middle Dawn in the First Era, where Akatosh had his Mirish bits pulled out of him by the Murakati Selective. So it's possible that this narrative has been influenced by that event, but it's also possible that Auriel and Akatosh were fundamentally different beings to start with. You'll see texts within the lore and opinions and discussions within the lore community that support both of these perspectives, but I just think it's interesting that this particular text brings out that contradiction in a way that's a lot starker than the way that other texts present it. And so the gods of men then go on to say, "We have suffered and are diminished for all time, but the mortal world we have made is glorious, filling our hearts and spirits with hope. Let us teach the mortal races to live well, to cherish beauty and honour, and to love one another as we love them. Thus are the gods of men tender and patient, and thus are men and beast folk greater in heart for joy or suffering, and ambitious for greater wisdom and a better world." That's a really interesting distinction in terms of the outlooks of the different two races, but I think I've possibly gone over that enough already, and if you want to have a look at that a bit more in depth, then you can look at the book Varieties of Faith and the earlier sections of the monomyth, which make the distinction between these two types of pantheons a lot more obvious. I'm kind of curious about the grouping together of men and beast folk here. It suggests that the beast folk may have a similar purpose and outlook to men, which I'm not sure entirely holds up. There's a potentially a sharing in outlook. This is particularly the case if you look at the Khajiiti myth, who consider that Nerni is a place of suffering and trial and hardship, but whether or not that's a good thing or not, they're not really sure. They credit Azura as their creator and Fadomai as their mother, and the mother of most of the gods, if not all the gods. And therefore, you'd think that a Padmaic set of beings would go along with the Mannish view, but the Khajiit don't really. But they are generally some of the races that do have that greater heart for joy and suffering and are trying to make the world better and change the world in a way that the Mer don't really. This split isn't quite so neat as saying that the men and beast folk definitely all think this way, but there's certainly an ideological slant there. I don't really want to talk about the Argonian perspective here because it is so different, but it's potentially one way of thinking about how the men and beast folk and why the men and beast folk are grouped together here. And also, if you look at the Khajiiti myth explicitly, it talks about a group of men that could not hold their shape when you're talking about how the Khajiit came to be. So that's potentially another reason for why the beast folk are grouped with men here. "Now when the Daedra lords heard Shazar, they mocked him and the other Aedra. 'Cut parts of ourselves off and lose them forever? That's stupid. You'll be sorry. We're far smarter than you, for we'll create a new world out of ourselves, but we will not cut it off or let it mock us, but we will make this world within ourselves, forever ours and under our complete control.'" I just want to pause here and note that they're grouping Shazar along with the other Aedra. which kind of answers a question that gets asked a lot in the lore community of, is Lorcan, who is obviously Shuzar in this telling, an Aedra? There's many and various answers to this, and the better answers for no will take a lot more time than I have to explain now. But it's a very, very definite stance here that Shuzar, and thereby Lorcan, is seen as an ancestor of men in a way that potentially the Mer don't see that. So the Daedra lords created the Daedric realms and all the ranks of lesser Daedra, great and small. And for the most part, the Daedra lords were pleased with this arrangement, for they always had worshippers and servants and playthings close to hand. One of the things that I wanted to draw out here was that it talks about the Daedra creating the Daedric realms. It doesn't talk about the creation of Oblivion, which, if you look into various other bits of the politics of Oblivion, there are realms that are unaligned to Daedric princes, and places where lesser Daedra have banded together and created realms of their own that aren't subject to the whim of any particular prince. So Oblivion as a state, as a plane of existence, exists independently of the Daedric realms here, and that's potentially a reason why we see the term Daedric realms rather than Oblivion being used. However, the way that the lesser Daedra are talked to here makes me think that this isn't the whole truth either. If you look at some of the lesser Daedra, particularly if you think about the Dromora, they have been noted to change masters, change allegiances, in a way that you wouldn't really think is possible if this formation of the Daedric realms and the lesser Daedra is entirely the truth. It says earlier that the Daedra lords explicitly said that they weren't going to cut parts of themselves off and lose control of part of themselves. The way that the Dromora are acting is entirely in contradiction with that. So this obviously isn't the whole truth of everything that's going on in Oblivion. That whole perspective of Oblivion being just the manifestation of the princes and being populated with their obedient servants is in direct contrast to the things that we know about the Dromora, and particularly about the other realms of Oblivion. So we're obviously not getting the whole truth here. It's quite obvious that however this story is being told is emphasizing the Aedra far more than the Daedra in terms of both what they venerate and what they know. But at the same time, they sometimes looked with envy on the mortal realms, for though the mortals were foul and feeble and contemptible, their passions and ambitions were far more surprising and entertaining than the antics of the lesser Daedra. This suggests something that is kind of implicit in the way that Shuzar has been talking about the creation of the world, about creating something new, something different, but it's never really explicitly spelled out until here, really, that if you create something out of yourself, it can only really express parts of yourself in a different way. So the Daedric princes, in a way, already know all of the stuff that they can create, because they can spend however much time getting to know themselves, and that will only take it so far. Whereas the synthesis of the way different spirits put together Mundus can produce stuff that is entirely different from the parent elements, if you like, and it can then produce a synthesis that is quite different from what's gone before, which is why that's so interesting. Thus do the Daedra lords court and seduce certain amusing specimens of the mortal races, especially the passionate and powerful. It gives the Daedra lords special pleasure to steal away from Shuzar and the Aedra, the greatest and most ambitious mortals. Not only are you fools to mutilate yourselves, gloat the Daedra lords, but you cannot even keep the best pieces, which prefer the glory and power of the Daedra lords to the feeble vulgarity of the mush-minded Aedra. This part about the Daedra lords courting and seducing certain amusing specimens among the mortal races is interesting because it talks about the passionate and powerful And we have a quote from N'Gasta, who was one of the antagonists in The Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard, that the Daedra Lords inspired the passions that they are associated with, which perhaps suggests that the way that the Daedra interact with the world does influence it. They are putting a part of themselves into the world in a way by influencing the behaviour of mortals. Either that, or we don't know the whole truth about how the Daedra and the mortal realm interact entirely. And that's about it for our waltz through the Cyrodiilic monomyth. I just wanted to finish with a discussion on the figure of Shazar, who's been key through all this. There's not really an awful lot to say apart from he is quite obviously the mannish version of Lorcan in this particular telling. He's changed quite a bit in how he's been seen throughout Tamriel's history, and I would urge you to look at the book Shazar and the Divines, which goes into a bit more detail on that particular aspect of him. The name Shazar quite clearly owes quite a bit more to the Nordic shore than the Mirish Lorcan, but as the Nords don't actually have a creation myth within the game lore, then it's not going to have made it into this particular compilation. I also think it's quite interesting that the Cyrodiilics put a bit more flesh on the bones of what the Daedra are compared to most of the other myths within this particular text. It's clear that they have a definite place within Cyrodiilic culture and within Mannish culture in general, and rather than being entirely excluded from the equation in the way that they are with Mirish cultures, and in a way they are with the Psijiks as well. They get generalized to the point of not really having a distinct identity in the myth of the Arabis. They get pointed out as the founders of Oblivion, but that's about it. Their motives and the characterization of them is a lot starker when we look at the Cyrodiilic creation myth. And that's all I've got to say on Shazar's song. We'll be wrapping up our look at the monomyth with a look at the Ultmeri creation myth the next time we do this. Although by the time this is out, that will be in 2 weeks. These will by now be being interspersed with the usual Riddle and Uncertainty podcasts asking questions. So you will have to wait 2 weeks until we finish off this particular text, I'm afraid. Thank you ever so much for joining me. If you've been enjoying what you hear, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen. And if you want to support me in a more personal way, please drop me a tip at ko-fi/Aramithius or become my patron at patreon.com/writteninuncertainty. Until next time, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and presented by Aramithius. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky and Jeremy Saul. You can find Jan's work on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and Jeremy's Northerner Diaries is available for purchase and on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Should introduce myself. I'm Corin Black, a humble half-demon, and folks around Baltimore call me the Devil's Runt. Here we go, finally moving again.
How do you feel about methamphetamines?
You know, devil's blood don't make you a devil.
Under the Shroud. Fantasy, noir, and horror from Baltimore's sin-soaked streets. Find creator Ian Humphrey on Twitter at @fictionalian.
Rated M for mature. because we don't believe in scripted advertisements, we're gonna do this raw.
I'm regretting this decision.
No, you're not. This is the DL, Weekly Gaming News. There's nothing to regret here, because it's your source for everything in the gaming world. Every week, we bring it to you, unscripted, unfiltered. That's why it's rated M for mature, right, Brenna?
Among many, many other reasons.
I am one of your hosts, Jameson.
And as he already said, I am Brenna, the other glorious part to this quality podcast.
You can find us every week wherever you listen to your podcasts at DL Gaming News. And you can also find us on Instagram and Twitter if you want some gaming news in your social media feed every day at DL Gaming News.
And you can find us individually if you really, really, truly want to see our faces. I am at DL_MotherGoose.
And I'm at DL Jameson. And this was an advertisement. Go fuck yourselves.